produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. This week is College Campus Focus Week here on the Audio Stash, and make sure you visit normalaudiostash.com for links to most of Normal's campus chapters and other important links to help everyone on campus this year get involved with ending marijuana prohibition. Yesterday, we heard from UCSB Normal's Lauren Vasquez, and today we'll start off the program with an interview with Aaron Dame. Aaron spoke with us this summer about running a Normal chapter on a rather conservative university campus at Purdue University. Aaron is now Normal's National Outreach Coordinator, so if you're a student seeking to start a campus chapter of your own this year, call Aaron at 888-67-NORMAL. That's 888-67-NORMAL for ideas and support. Now let's get to our interview with Aaron Dame on running Purdue's Campus Normal. Welcome here today to the Audio Stash, Aaron.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. So let's look further at Normal on Purdue's campus. You're right there in the Midwest, so what kind of reaction has Normal gotten on Purdue's campus there?
It's very conservative. Purdue is an engineering school. It's also an agriculture school, but a lot of people are from either the Illinois, Ohio, or Indiana area, so which is mostly Republican. Like I said, it's just really conservative, and not a lot of people are open-minded about things. They pretty much are set in their ways, and their parents' ways, and their grandparents' ways. So.
And tell me what kind of activities most students are involved with on campus.
Right. At Purdue, we actually have, they place a lot of emphasis on the Greek society. So there's a lot of any kind of activities we have, you know, it's really focused on the Greek, whether it's homecoming or, you know, still even with the athletic activities, they place a lot of emphasis on that Greek social life.
And Aaron, how big is this school? How many folks are on campus on any given day?
We have about 40,000 people on campus. We also have a very large graduate program and also an MBA program. So there are about, like I said, 40,000
people. So 40,000 people on this campus. It must take up a fair chunk of land. You mentioned something earlier about the interesting police situation there.
Right. We actually have five different jurisdictions ruling over the Purdue campus. We have Purdue police, which, like I was mentioning earlier, are not rent-a-cops. They are actually police officers that do carry guns, that do drive police cars. We also have West Lafayette, which is the town that we live in, then Lafayette, which is the adjacent town, Tippecanoe County Police, and then also Indiana State Police. So, and that's not to mention the students that are in the security guard. You know, they walk around in the evenings and everything. So there are a lot of people looking out for us.
Now, Normal is seeking for marijuana to become the lowest law enforcement priority on campus, but that's not the case currently.
Right, they do. Like I was mentioning, with such emphasis being on the Greek society, you know, they really kind of turn the other way when it comes to underage drinking or, you know, kind of alcohol in general. But really, that's not the case with marijuana. They actually, there was an incident in a dorm involving a shooting, a homicide, and a suicide that happened over a drug deal. And since then, you know, it's just been completely, like, no tolerance about it. If you get caught having, you know, possessing anything, a seed, a stem, whatever it is, in the dorms. Whoever is there with you, whether it be your roommate, your friends, it doesn't matter. If they weren't smoking, they also get penalized for that. You get kicked out of campus housing. You lose your financial aid, the whole deal. So,
Aaron, after having been on Purdue's campus for a few years now, what kind of impact does alcohol have on your peers?
Well, it's kind of, it's really discouraging because you go out, and I understand the college bar scene is big on any college, but it's just, it's overruling Purdue. People, you know, starting at all nights of the week, really, they're just drunk people roaming the campus, which sounds kind of absurd, but it really is. They just don't care. Like I said, they really just turn the other cheek. And the only good thing, I was telling you earlier, the athletes are kind of getting prosecuted, but I guess that's mainly because they put them in such a big light. You know, if they didn't react to something like a hit and run, it would look bad on them. So they did get suspended from athletics, but, you know, I'm sure they didn't lose their financial aid. They're still living, you know, in campus housing. So I get to play football, but, you know, it's not that bad.
And with such a large campus, and even with a graduate program, there must be a pretty big group of folks who are under 21 and shouldn't be drinking at all.
Exactly, exactly. And while you may get a ticket for that, an underage you know, ticket, they usually don't give those out. If they're to break up a frat party, it's just kind of like, you know, go on home, get, you know, just get out of here, clear the area, whatnot. It's not something like everybody that's under 21 needs to, you know, give us their IDs, we're going to arrest you, we're going to give you a ticket. It's none of that. It's just kind of like, oh, we're not looking, just kind of go away.
And what happens to the alcoholic students, you know, the ones who may be under 21 but also have a daily problem with alcohol?
Right. Okay, the only good thing I can say about that is if you get multiple, you know, tickets for underage drinking or whatever it is, Purdue does put you into a program. And it's the same, just about the same program they put you in with drugs. But the first time, you know, you get caught with any kind of drug, you're in this program for a very long time. It costs you money every time that you go, and if you miss one session, no matter, you know, if it was scheduled, if they knew you were going to miss it, it doesn't matter. You have to start the program over. And this is the same kind of thing they're doing with alcohol, but like I said, it's so much more lenient. You know, you get however many tickets, like numerous tickets, before they put you in that, as opposed to just, you know, automatically being enrolled when, you know, you get caught with marijuana.
Now, it sounds like there's a ton of visible law enforcement on campus, and it seems like with everyone drunk all the time, they're going to need it to pick everybody up. But targeting marijuana, do you think this is holding them back, do you think?
It's not even, you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to do this project was not even because, you know, specifically marijuana. I mean, obviously that's the main reason, but also I can just see on campus from being there, like you said, 3 years, you know, that something isn't right. You know, our priorities, the police's priorities, are not in the right place. They are really, like I said, they're really out there looking for us and not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, there are rapes on campus every semester, you know, more than there should be. Why aren't those bike cops, you know, if there's so many of them and they're catching so many marijuana smokers, then why aren't the number of rapes going down? You know, why aren't the number of drunk drivings going down? It's odd. You know, something is out of place. So I hope that by doing this, it will not only help the marijuana smokers, but it will also help, you know, the other, you know, the possible victims that we have, whether it be a hit and run or a rape or whatever it's going to be. So hopefully it will improve the safety of the campus in general.
Aaron Dame is the president of Purdue Normal. Thanks again for joining us here on the Audio Stash today.
Oh, well, thank you, and have a good one.
We have links to Purdue Normal and most Campus Normal chapters right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Again, Aaron is now Normal's National Outreach Coordinator, so if you're a student seeking to start up a campus chapter of Normal for your own this year, call Aaron at 888-67-NORMAL. That's 888 67normal for ideas and support. Next up today, our second campus-oriented interview with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York, author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and a member of Normal's Advisory Board. As well as an expert regarding the science of cannabis, Mitch has an extensive background in alcohol and alcohol addiction research, making Dr. Earlywine a wonderful guest to outline the following question: why is cannabis safer than alcohol? Dr. Mitch Earlywine, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash again today.
Happy to be back.
Great to speak with you again, Mitch. And in Colorado, of course, they are running the Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation Initiative, a successful initiative in Denver that is now going statewide, the premise of which says that marijuana is, in fact, safer than alcohol. So let's talk about the science behind this. First, what in the body, why is marijuana safer than alcohol?
Well, the bottom line is the safer folks really do have the research on their side. When you think about alcohol's impact on, say, the liver, the digestive system, and its experience of intoxication in the brain, you see that there are a whole lot of negative consequences associated with acute use, just using one time, and some really expensive and drastically negative consequences associated with chronic use. So heavy drinking across the years literally decreases the weight of your brain, increases your risk for all kinds of liver damage, puts you at higher risk for certain forms of cancer, and even can have some negative cardiac, some bad impact on your heart. So clearly this is a drug that is in need of a whole lot of respect and one that can be misunderstood as far as its health consequences. In contrast, cannabis, particularly small use by adults in a recreational setting, with plenty of time in between uses, has very few negative consequences that can be documented. One of my biggest concerns when I first reviewed this literature was its impact on your lungs, but we're finding time and again that that impact seems to be either minimal or non-existent. There was big concern about cannabis and brain function over the years, but data suggests that any deviations that show up with daily use require at least a couple years of daily use to detect, and then can only be detected with some pretty sophisticated equipment. And in fact, I really can't recommend daily use for non-medical users anyway. And the impact on other things that we all heard was, supposed to be the case when we were in junior high, the idea that cannabis increases aggression is just clearly laughable, and you can't even get funding to do research on something like that. The notion that cannabis increases your probability of using hard drugs is also not causally linked. It doesn't look like having used cannabis, someone is more likely to become heroin dependent, for example. And finally, just this notion that marijuana will turn you into a dependent person, that using marijuana infrequently but regularly will somehow make you dependent on cannabis. It looks like from, ratings of professionals who deal in the addictions, that cannabis is actually less addictive than caffeine or things like that, and national surveys suggest that between 9 and 12% of regular users do develop symptoms of dependence, but cannabis dependence is nothing like the dependence associated with nicotine and, of course, alcohol.
You talk about those. You talk about that dependence. When you talk about the percentage numbers, how about drinking? I mean, what about those addiction numbers there? How likely are you to become an alcoholic in America?
National surveys suggest that among regular drinkers, the number is more like 12 to 16% end up developing symptoms of dependence. And with nicotine, it's also something comparable, particularly anybody who starts smoking daily. The risk can be 20 to 25% of developing nicotine dependence. And, clearly the negative consequences of those drugs are just markedly worse even in the dependence stages, so that, cannabis-dependent folks don't risk the heart and lung problems that tobacco-dependent folks do, and they don't risk the brain and liver functions problems that alcohol-dependent people do.
And you talked about, we've talked about alcohol raising aggression. Why does that happen? Why do you get mean drunks out there?
The curious thing is data from my own laboratory suggests not only are people who are intoxicated mean to people who are mean to them, they're aggressive towards people who are completely innocent and, and just third parties who happen to stumble across them. It looks like the way you interpret the world around you when you're intoxicated tends to be in a more aggressive fashion, and that your focus, your attention decreases during alcohol intoxication. So somebody may trip and accidentally bump into you, but you don't have enough attentional capacity to see that they tripped, so you just think they bumped into you on purpose. And that's clearly a part of it. And people are suggesting that there are certain brain structures that are shut down given alcohol's sedative effects, so it makes people less willing to solve problems in a rational way and more likely to just go right to using their fists.
Now, Mitch, as somebody who's seen a lot of data in this area, is there anything to suggest that marijuana has even the same negative consequences of alcohol on a social basis?
When I start looking at aggression in particular, the old studies from the 70s suggested that there was either no impact or even a mildly decreasing impact on aggression. There's been one study since then where a group of sociopaths, a group of people with antisocial personality disorder, got high and did a task that was supposed to reveal aggression, and they did get more aggressive, but there were only 8 people in the study, and I'm reluctant to make a big deal out of that. Other social consequences, well, when you ask folks about, you know, the negative social consequences of cannabis intoxication, it's usually a mild social anxiety. They got quiet or they were misinterpreting their friends, but it never turned into an argument or any kind of aggressive fisticuffs. So I think that that's pretty clearly not an issue with cannabis consumption.
Is there anything out there that has ever said, we know that alcohol makes people, what's the polite way to put this, sexually more promiscuous when they're drunk or on high amounts of alcohol? Is there anything to suggest that marijuana has the same effect on the human body?
The curious thing about cannabis and unsafe sex, at least, is that we can't tease apart what's the actual cause, what's the actual result of the drug, and what is just the kind of person who would happen to get high and end up in a sexual situation in the first place. So the research that really needs to be done hasn't been done. Often folks will report that cannabis enhances sexual feelings or increases their perceived duration of orgasm, things like that, that make it sound like it would be a sexual enhancer of sorts, but it doesn't seem to co-vary with actual unsafe sexual experiences, except in some populations of people who I think would probably be having these unsafe sexual experiences anyway. But again, that research hasn't been done the way it really needs to be done. In contrast, a colleague of mine just over here at Syracuse has shown that when men get drunk in the lab and you just ask them how much do they like condoms, the men who've had alcohol say they hate condoms. The men who haven't are much more open to the use of condoms. Automatically, you could see how this could translate into a real problem with safe sex and alcohol consumption.
Mitch, that is absolutely fascinating. So it really comes down to our perceptions of the world when we take these drugs. So that's what makes alcohol much more dangerous than cannabis, because it alters our worldviews so drastically, it seems.
I think from the health perspective, from the way we interact with our fellow human beings, and even just the impact of chronic use over years and years, cannabis clearly doesn't have the negative consequences that alcohol has.
So, and again, if you're going to become, is there something common about this? Do people who drink alcohol, smoke cannabis, are these separate groups? Do people choose one or the other?
As it turns out, there is a subset of folks who like to use both these drugs and both of them simultaneously. And that can make things particularly difficult for this kind of research, but also for an individual who's experiencing the effects of both of these drugs, because some of their subjective experiences are counter to each other. It can be a very confusing experience. Then there are, of course, subsets of folks who really consider themselves alcohol people and subsets of folks who consider themselves only cannabis people. But a lot of these are co-varied out as well. So people who tend to drink once a week or more may not be more likely to use cannabis, but folks who use cannabis once a week or more are often more likely to use alcohol. But again, this is a set of research is still really in its infancy, and the combination of drugs is something we're still trying to understand. What I can recommend, with very few hesitations, is if you're going to use one mind-altering drug, by all means, you don't want to use another one on top of it. It can just make things markedly more confusing.
And when we talk about this initiative, when you talk about giving a population a broad choice, has there ever been any research to ask people this question in a clinical setting and say, if you had the choice to use alcohol or use cannabis, which would it be?
What's curious about that is there are folks who would choose either option, but we've never been able to ask it in a setting where the negative consequences legally were the same. And I think there are a lot of folks who would prefer cannabis over alcohol if they didn't have to fear any kind of arrest, any kind of fine, any kind of police intervention. And then the negative consequences being what they are, they would choose cannabis and end up with fewer negative consequences than they would if they were using alcohol regularly.
This is really interesting, Mitch. So basically, we've got to deal with the political issues, sort of like what they're doing in Colorado right now, in order to make a well-informed health decision for ourselves personally.
And in truth, even trying to compare across countries, there's still nowhere where cannabis is completely legal. And so we can't answer this question until we actually change the policy.
Mitch, this has been absolutely fascinating. And also, do you have any final words about the SAFER initiative before we let you go today?
My key would be to ask anybody who's in Colorado and going to vote on this to go ahead and check out the Normal website, to pick up a copy of my book, Understanding Marijuana, to go to the SAFER website, and just keep an open mind and think maybe the stuff I learned in junior high wasn't absolutely accurate. Let me take a look at the research that's out there now and make an informed decision.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Glad to be here.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York, author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and a member of Normal's Advisory Board. We have links to his book and a special archive of our conversations with Dr. Earlywine at normalaudiostash.com. Let's wrap up our program today with some comedy from the Pot's Greatest Hits CD, a spectacular CD of some seriously funny stuff. Every purchase helps out the Normal Foundation, and we have links to buy a copy at normalaudiostash.com. Our good laugh today comes from Franklin Ajay in this track, Stoned for a Final Exam.
Yeah, I was in college, and I took a final loaded and did that. I wasn't going to pass anyway. It's not like I was losing a class, you know. It was this physical anthropology class, and I was studying, but it seemed to be the wrong shit. I was just studying the wrong shit when it came to the tests, you know, because I'd look at my tests. I remember I got the midterm back, and I went, you know, it was an F, you know what I mean? I said, wow, and I studied for this. You know, I went to the professor, and I said, can I write an extra credit report? I don't want to try to be lifting my final grade, you know, with this, I don't want to be trying to do an F, you know what I mean? He said, okay, write this report. I spent the whole weekend, wrote a 10-page report, gave it to him Monday. Wednesday, he gave it to me. I looked at it, I said, well, you know, now I'm trying to lift two Fs, okay? Well, this is an improvement. And I had this epiphany, fuck this class. There's no hope here. If you get an A, the best you can get in the class is an F plus. You know, I'm not into working hard for no F. You know, F has got to surprise me. You know, I can't be working towards an F. You know, that's nothing to be proud of. Tell somebody, yeah, man, I busted my ass for this F. I wrote 5 extra credit reports. I got an F on every one of them, too. I was going to write another one, and the professor said, just let it go. Said he was tired of reading my shit. So I said, my plan, which was a pretty good plan, I said, you know what, I'll study hard in these other classes and lift my grade point average to cushion the F that's coming. You know, that was my plan. So I came down to the final on that day, and I woke up at 7 a.m., and I had a really good night's sleep, you know what I mean, because I hadn't studied at all. You know? I had quit studying, you know. And the thing was, I mean, I was amazed at how clear my mind was. My mind was so alert. It was so clear. I remember thinking, man, this is the perfect mental condition to actually take a test. Only thing you're lacking is knowledge. Your mind is right, bro. If you knew anything at all about this, you would be dangerous today. Right? So I said, well, what am I going to do? I got this test at 8 o'clock. What am I going to do? Okay. And my roommate, who was a heavy pot smoker, a weed smoker, because white cats say pot, brothers say weed or herb, you know what I mean? But he left a joint in the ashtray, so I said, fuck it, I'm going to smoke this, you know. And I got to smoke it, and I'm really glad I did, because it gave me perspective. I got a little buzz going. And I said, you know, why should all the pressure be on me? You know, we're both equal participants in this test. I said, that ain't right. So I said, today, I'm going to write some shit that he's going to have trouble understanding. That's right. He ain't going to be able to just grade this test. He's going to have to show this to the department. They're all going to have to agree on this F. You are going to have to work hard to give me this F, man. That's right. I was I was cruising. So I went down to take the test, and I was totally detached, which is perfect. And I had this nice mode where I was kind of detached from the testing process so I could kind of observe it, you know. And I walked into the hall, and all the students were nervous. And that's when I really realized how nervous people are, man. Because you say, hey, Joe, what's up? I can't talk to you now, man. Okay, I read 15,000 pages last night. If I say one more word, it's going to all run out, all of it. It's crammed in there. I said, man, you shouldn't be cramming, man. You know what I mean? That doesn't work. You should be like me. You should get your work finished a little bit earlier. I finished all my work right around the midterm, you know, for this class. The fuck did he know? Really? Oh, yeah, I finished, man. I did my last assignment right at the midterm. Wow, man. So I went and got the test, and I looked at the test, you know, and I was nervous, because I was thinking, you know, my only fear was, what if I had studied and there was something I could have answered? So I looked at the test, and I said, oh, you know, shit, I was right. You know, I can't answer shit here. It's a good thing I didn't study for this test. You know, I would have had very low self-esteem after this, because I would have said, man, I can't even study the right shit. So I said, okay, I'm free. Now how am I going to take this test, you know? And the thing was, I said, all right, how am I going to pass this test? I was into Star Trek at that time in the late 70s, and Spock was my man. So I said, I'm going to be like Spock. I'm going to take this test using pure logic. That's it. I'm going to see if that works. I'm just going to try the logic approach. Try to look at every question logically. So I got the test. The first section was 40 true and false. I said, fuck, I'll just be logical. Some of these got to be true. Some of these have to be false. I'm bound to get some of them right. I just mark them the way I feel. True, false, true, true, false, true, true, true. Nope, nope. Can't be three trues in a row. Been on the last one, man. I made the last one look like an F and a T. So I could argue. That was going to get me one of these motherfuckers right. Just in case the law of averages didn't work. So I finished that, and I was cool. Second section was tough. It was essay. So I looked at the first question. What is a protozoa? I said, shit, let me get logical. It's got to be something. He said, elaborate. Can't elaborate on something that doesn't exist. Okay. All right. What could it be, though? That is the question. What is a protozoa? I started looking at it. Maybe it's in the word. Protozoa. 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 Go with that. Yeah, I wrote a protozoa is a professional to zoa. One who to zoas for money is a protozoa. Then I got into it because I was rolling. The weed had me rolling. In ancient days, protozoa meant to be for the tozoas. But it has changed with modern usage. Hit that shit. Thank you all. Take care now.
That was some comedy from the Pot's greatest hit CD. Get the whole thing and laugh all night long on your own. Every single purchase helps out the Normal Foundation, and we have links to buy a copy right up at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.